Peter, welcome. I'm glad you can make it tonight. We're happy to have you here. That was quite magnificent, actually. Good way to start the program.
I think it gets your heart pumping and your blood running. It's a beautiful piece, the Dies Irae from the Mozart Requiem. We performed the entire Requiem several times, but last spring we did a collection of pieces that major choral works that featured in movies. And, of course, that was featured in Amadeus, the movie about Mozart's life.
Among others. So tell our listeners a little bit about Cornbrio. I think the folks who may not know where it came from, how long it's been operating, and how many people and so on.
Well, Cornbrio is a musical term, an Italian musical term, meaning with spirit. And we thought it was a good way to describe our group. About 20 years ago, almost 20 years ago, a group of us wanted to get together and form a new choral society down on the shoreline in the area between the triangle, if you will, between New Haven, Middletown, and New London. And we're located in the Essex, Chester, Deep River area. So we got together and we formed this group. We wanted it to be an auditioned secular chorus, not affiliated with the church. But naturally, the great repertoire of the centuries has been based on the Latin Tridentine Mass, and so that's often what we sing. We reached out to some local musical folks here in Connecticut. We're blessed with wonderful arts, of course, here. We reached out to Dr. Peter Bagley, who was the then professor of choral conducting at UConn, and James Sinclair, conductor of the Orchestra of New England in New Haven. They both gave us great advice and helped us to start it up. And we were very fortunate to find Dr. Stephen Bruce as our founding conductor and music director. And I'm blessed to say that he's been with us ever since and continues to lead the group terrifically well. He's a wonderful conductor.
He's taught at a lot of different levels. He's taught at college level and high school level and has directed other kinds of groups. So how do you find the individuals that actually sing in your organization? How do you come by, it's not like baseball, a soprano to be named later or anything like that. I suppose you have to, people come and audition?
Yes, over the years, we've been going 19 years. Next year is our 20th anniversary. It'll be a big gala year. But over the years, we've built up a loyal following. Our Christmas concert is very, very popular. We used to have one performance that got oversold, and now we have two. But it's basically word of mouth and people hearing about the group and then applying to audition. We have auditions twice a year at the beginning of each semester, one in January, one in September.
Uh-huh. And how many folks are a part of the group now?
We have about 65 members. We have a very solid, loyal core. Members, many of which have been with us a long time, and we add people gradually through the audition process. We lose people, unfortunately, from time to time.
And how wide is the range? I know you have most of the folks are from Connecticut, but do some folks travel further to be part of the group?
No, they're all from Connecticut, although I myself was working out of state the other year and I managed to get back every Tuesday for rehearsal, so I think I got the record for the most mileage.
that's pretty good. Now you do some in among all of the classical material. You also do some popular stuff.
That is correct.
When we were off camera, so to speak, we were talking about music from the movies and that kind of thing.
Yes, we our concert programming is eclectic. I think that's the best way to describe it, and I think our audience loves that. There's something for everybody. So typically there's a classical core to the concert, but if you take the Christmas concerts, for example, and there's a lot of traditional Christmas music, there's even some carols so the audience can participate. We often do antiphonal music from the Renaissance time, and that is the choir is spread out around the sanctuary of the church in which we perform, which, by the way, is Christ the King in Old Lyme, which has a beautiful space. We're grateful to Father Ash and Bill Thomas, the music director, for making that space available to us. But the antiphonal music spreads the choir around the sanctuary, often with small orchestral groups as well.
Ah, yeah.
So it's recreating the sound of Vivaldi back in Venice in the Renaissance times. Well, and then we do American music, spirituals, and so on.
Yeah. Well, we listened to an edition of When I Fall in Love, done by the group. So I think our listeners would like to hear that. Let's give that a listen. Obviously, a live recording there, if you're close to the audience, unfortunately, you sometimes hear the audience as well. Well, I think Nat King Cole would have been jealous of that that rendition. That was very, very nice. And that it's really neat to have that kind of range, I think, where you're doing, you know, Bach 1 minute or Handel, and then you can go and do someone do 20th century music at the same time.
Yes, we enjoy that very, very much, and we do quite a bit of 20th century music, including some contemporary U.S. composers, Gwyneth Walker, who lives up in Vermont.
Ah.
And she's come down to attend some of the concerts where we've performed her pieces.
Ah. Now, I have to ask, do you find that kind of thing? I always wonder if the composer is in the audience and you're doing that composer's piece, does it put more pressure on you? Do you always feel... I recently went to a Tanglewood rehearsal, and the first piece they did during the rehearsal was a modern piece by, I'm sorry, I don't remember the name, but the composer was sitting in the front row, and the conductor kept turning and looking at him and so on, and at one point they stopped and conversed, and I thought, there must be a lot of pressure to have that person sitting behind you as you try to perform. So
I think that's typically what happens, because the composer obviously has a certain idea of how the piece should perform, the tempo, the and so on, and there will be a dialogue between the composer and the conductor.
Yeah.
Absolutely, but the main thing is to see big smiles on the face of the composer.
Right. You want to make sure
that's very important.
I often thought about Bach's sons, you know, trying to play the harpsichord with him standing behind, or write music with him in the room. You know, not that note. This one. This is better. I mean, I would think it would be a lot of pressure. Let's start. You know, you have some concerts coming up in the next week or so. Let's talk a little bit about what is coming up on your schedule and what kind of music you'll be performing during those concerts.
Absolutely, we have Christmas concerts coming up on December 11th at 8 p.m. and December 13th at 3 p.m. both Christ the King Church in Old Lyme, Connecticut. And this will follow our normal tradition, which is much loved. And we're starting off with an extraordinary piece by Ralph Vaughan Williams called Hodie Christus Natus Est, Today Christ is Born. It was written back in 1954 for the Three Choirs Festival in England. There's a funny story. This has very complex rhythms.
Uh-huh.
And at the first performance, the conductor was invited to conduct the piece. And after he sweated through the first movement, he said, "Goodness, if I'd realized how complicated this was to conduct, I'd have made it a lot different.
I would have written it a lot easier." Well, it's always kind of interesting when you think about actually writing a piece. You know, Aaron Copland wrote Appalachian Spring for the venue, and he realized, oh, I only have room for 11 or 12 performers, you know, before the stage, you know, so we have to write it. So I imagine, have you had pieces written expressly for your group?
We did commission one piece by Dr. Peter Bagley from UConn called Didn't It Rain? And it was a short piece with strong African overtones. He was at that time teaching in South Africa on an overseas assignment from UConn. And he wrote this, I think, traveling in the bush with students going to a game park. And I think he wrote it in the back of the bus. I'm not sure. But it was a neat piece. And we brought in a bunch of African-type musical percussion instruments to it a certain local quality. That was a lot of fun.
So say those dates again. Again, we'll go over it before the end of the program. But the dates of your upcoming concerts?
That's December the 11th at 8 p.m.
Which is next week, okay.
Yeah, and December the 13th, a week from Sunday at 3 p.m. And your listeners can call in for tickets to call 860-526-5399. That's 860-526-5399. Or even easier, just to go online to our website where you can buy tickets online and find all the details about the chorus.
It's a nice website, too. Yeah. You get to see everyone and see the church in the back.
Absolutely. And it's conbrio.org, C-O-N-B-R-I-O, conbrio.org. Very simple.
Okay. Well, let's listen to you. You did some Bach, some from the Magnificat.
Right. This is the first movement of the extraordinary piece, the Bach Magnificat. And this first movement, simply one word, Magnificat.
Let's listen.
Thank you.
great support from the musicians as well, and the orchestra as well. Great. Who were those folks?
Well, we actually have pretty much the same musicians every time. We call them the Combrea Festival Orchestra, but they come from different local orchestras, and we work with the same people. They're a great group, and I love the brass, the high D trumpets, and that are beautiful Baroque trumpets.
Yes. Just let me remind our listeners, you're listening to WMNR's Fine Arts Forum. I'm Fred Villardi, and we're speaking with Peter Amos, the vice president of Conbrio, the choral group, and we're talking about some of their upcoming concerts, and we're listening to some of their music, so I hope you're enjoying this as much as we are. So I understand, now, when I was looking at your website, I understand you're going to be doing some international tours as well, not just here in Connecticut.
That's correct, Fred. In fact, we've made 5 international tours so far, and our 6th tour is coming up this this spring, and we're heading off to Lisbon, Portugal, and giving a series of concerts in Portugal, traveling through the country, over the mountains into Spain, to Salamanca, and on to Madrid, which will be our final stop. And these tours are extraordinarily exciting for us to do. It's a chance to travel with each other, enjoy each other's company, sing together, and make music together. But we often perform in conjunction with local choral groups in Europe. And that's a tremendous way to meet people and feel the bond of music. Typically, the format is each group will prepare in advance maybe a third of the concert. We'll do a third, they'll do a third. And then we do a joint section together, where we have both prepared music in advance, but the same music. And we come together and sing together. And then the best part of it, of course, is we have a big party afterwards.
that always makes everyone feel better.
And so it's a lot of bonding and friendship. And
yeah.
We also get to sing in extraordinary places. You can be a tourist in Europe and you get to see the wonderful cathedrals and places, but to actually go to the Duomo in Milano, probably the high point for me was to sing in the sanctuary of St. Peter's in Rome.
Oh, yes.
And that took a lot of advanced planning, a lot of approvals going through the Vatican bureaucracy.
Yeah.
And finally, we were allowed to, and it was the eve of the Ascensiontide Mass. And we had the preconception we'd be shunted off into a side chapel, and there'd be a few widows in black coming to the service, and that would be the end of it.
Right.
But nothing like that happened at all. At the appropriate time, the ushers brought us right to the front, to the choir stalls beneath the high altar of the Vatican in St. Peter's Basilica, which is actually the largest Christian church in the world.
Right.
And I estimated there was a congregation of 5,000 people, which is pretty exciting. There was a long line of clergy came in with about 5 cardinals and a whole string of bishops and then minor clerics following up the rear. So we performed there, and that was one of the most spectacular things. We also performed at a music series in Dresden, and the final part of that was a big gala concert on the closing night of the festival called Dresden Singt, Dresden Sings. And on the steps of the Elbe River, a very famous place, they gathered about 3,000 singers from different choruses. And we were honored as the only U.S. chorus there. The whole square was filled with a symphony orchestra and seating for a huge crowd, probably 30,000 people. So that was another one of those very special occasions. One of these things that happen when you get a little bit crazy and you do these overseas tours.
Yeah. Now, do you get? Is it again the thing about pressure? Is it? Do you find that you're better off not knowing that you're going to have that larger group, or would you have been? Do you think the group would have been more nervous being in front? Oh no, we're actually going to be in the main chapel of St. Peter's.
Well, no, we were in good shape, but it was the first night. We landed that morning, having flown overnight from Kennedy, and we got in the morning, and this was the same evening, so we were still suffering from jet lag. So that we were a little bit surprised by that, but we pulled together and we did a great job. On our website, there's a photograph taken of that event.
Well, for you, what was if you could sing something, if you could do something that you haven't done, what would it be? If there's a place you could sing, or if there's a, not you personally, but the group itself.
Well, you know, we're a small group. We're 65 people. One of my personal, and I'm speaking personally now, not for the group, would be the Bach St. Matthew Passion. But it requires really two choruses, and it's really beyond our capability. We may join together, however, at some point in the future to do that.
Yeah.
In the past, we joined together with Mystic River Chorale, another local group, and we performed the Dona Nobis Pacem by Ralph Vaughan Williams, another big piece, and that went very, very well. So maybe there's a precedent for doing something.
If you do the St. Matthew Passion, I'll play it. I play it every year during Lent, as much of it as I can, and that's one of my favorites. So
it doesn't get any better.
And all the solos, how do you decide? I mean, all the solos in some of those pieces are just amazing. And, like, you know, how does that all work out in terms of the group?
Well, we have a policy of hiring professional soloists for our works. In fact, this year at Christmas, we have a tremendous soprano, Jūratė Svidytė, who's a Lithuanian soprano. Her father was a very famous Lithuanian composer, and she studied in the conservatory there and earned bachelor's and master's degrees in opera performance and vocal instruction. She's now a resident of Connecticut, I'm glad to say, and she's an assistant professor of music at Connecticut College.
Uh-huh.
And so Jūratė will be coming and joining us next week to sing our Christmas concert. She's supported by Stephen Hume's tenor and Chris Grundy bass, all three very accomplished musicians.
Uh-huh.
So we're very excited. For very small pieces, where it's just the odd line or two, we have some very accomplished singers.
I would think, yes.
But for the major pieces, we bring in professionals.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Handel, and then we'll listen to part of that Handel piece.
Yes, the Handel, well, of course, Handel, everybody knows Messiah, and Handel had a huge outpouring of music, operas, and oratorio. This is a piece called Dixit Dominus, The Word of the Lord, and again, another very bright piece of the kind of music that everybody enjoys, completely accessible, and this is the opening chorus from Handel's Dixit Dominus.
Okay, let's listen.
Thank you.
had mentioned that I had played Handel on Tuesday, my program on Tuesday, this past Tuesday, and it was from a concert. I played a harp concerto from a concert that he gave at King's Theatre, I think it was called, in London in the mid-1700s, where they played four of his pieces that had never been heard before, the Ode to St. Cecilia's and so on. And we were talking a little earlier. You could see why he had such status as he was probably the first rock star in music. I mean, people just would swoon over his music, but you can see why. And this is amazing.
Well, he was extraordinarily prolific, and you mentioned Messiah. He composed that in a remarkable 2 or 3 week period of huge creativity, and that's an icon, of course. And it's just an extraordinary piece, and it's popular for very good reason.
Yeah, he was certainly popular for a very good reason. And do you do the Messiah at some point? Have you done that in the past?
Actually, we haven't done it yet, simply because it's been so overexposed, I guess.
Yeah.
We try to seek out some of the less popular pieces, not because they're not good, but because they haven't been exposed. And probably that leads into talking about the Vivaldi piece that we're going to put on next. On one of our last overseas tours, we went to the former East Germany. We went to Leipzig, which is almost essential for any choral group to go to Leipzig, because, of course, that's the home of Johann Sebastian Bach. And we went to Thomaskirche, where his tomb is still there. But we had decided, we'd heard about an Australian musicologist. Her name is Janice Stockheit. And she was doing some research and found this score that had been attributed to some other minor composer. The story is very, very interesting. It seems that the Venetian copyist Giuseppe Baldan, this is a long time ago, got himself into a jam. He had to get some court music over to Dresden to fulfill a large order. And he grabbed this score, and he attributed it to Galuppi, another well-known composer, but not in Vivaldi's league. Well, it turns out it wasn't Galuppi at all. And Janice Stockheit, this musicologist, by very careful scholarship and consulting with many authorities, determined this indeed was the true Vivaldi. So this was a piece written obviously before 1741, that was the date of Vivaldi's death, which was discovered, rediscovered, if you will, in 2005. And so it's brought back from the past. It had lain dormant for all those years. So we got the chance to perform this in 2008. And I think possibly it was just the second performance in the United States. The other, just linking back to our story of the European tour, so the bus was in Dresden. We traveled on a bus. I said, hey, we've got to go over to the library. And they said, well, why? It's not on the schedule. Because that's where the manuscript is. So we went to the Saxony State Library, which held this famous manuscript. So that was very, very exciting to kind of pull it all together. Yeah. I want to talk to you about this. This is the Amen Chorus from Dixit Dominus by Vivaldi. And this is the culmination of the whole piece. It's a fugue. Your listeners will know very well what a fugue is, with the subject being introduced by one part then another in the formal sense. But Vivaldi steps up the action a bit here. He piles on the pressure. So after having gone through this once, he then halves the time. He doubles the speed. And so it's getting very intense. But that's not enough for Vivaldi. He does another trick. He pulls every trick out of the book. He goes to something called stretti, which means he brings the entries in much faster, one after another, so they're piling in on top of each other, and it gives a very, very exciting climax to the whole piece.
Wow. Well, let's see. Let's hear it.
Thank you.
they didn't mention in that, of course, there are two themes going on at the same time, the Amen theme
and
the Et in Secula Seculorum theme, and they're counterposed against each other.
It's just amazing. I hope you gave everyone the day off after that, and they would have to all collapse.
It's a fantastic piece to sing. You know, Fred, the reason why we sing is because it's uplifting. It's great for the spirit. It's good for your body. You're breathing and standing well and holding your posture. And it's great for the mind because you can't think about having a bad day on the office you're working on music of that quality.
I always, when I play something, there's certainly some of the modern pieces, I always talk about if you go see a live concert of certain composers, you should sit on the left side so you can watch the percussionists, because they're doing so much work, and you can actually sense the pace of the piece by watching how the percussionists perform and everything. But this was the situation. These are one of the, I would have loved to have been there the first time this was performed, because I think people would have been amazed. The idea of having those two themes plus the speed at which it was done.
And yes, it's extraordinary.
Pretty amazing.
He was top of his game when he wrote that.
Yeah.
Now, we have, of course, our 20th year celebration coming up next year, which we're very excited about. It starts a year from now, Christmas of 2016, and it goes through the season and through the spring of 2017. And in celebration of that, we're putting on two very special concerts. A year from this Christmas, we have a performance of the Bach Christmas Oratorio.
Which is
another extraordinary piece.
I love the fact that you guys don't. We're going to do this. We're going to do this piece. It's nothing simple for Conbrio. It seems like they're doing some.
We try to challenge ourselves, and then in the spring, one of the great pieces of all time, the Brahms Requiem. It's not a Requiem based on the Latin Mass. It's based on a collection of other words, but it's quite an extraordinary piece, and we are very much hoping that we'll have a return of Patricia Schumann to sing the soprano part, and if he's available, David Pitzinger, her husband, who's a bass baritone and made a very big name for himself, not only in grand opera, but also more recently on Broadway when he was performing in South Pacific. So we're very excited, and with a bit of luck, he'll have a chance in his very busy schedule to join us, and that will be a very, very exciting concert as the finale of our 20th anniversary here. Early on, Fred, you asked me about a piece we'd like to do at some point. You know, we do multi-part pieces, we do four-part, eight-part, we've done 12-part pieces, but there's one piece in the choral repertoire that stands above all else, and it's a piece by the English composer Thomas Tallis.
Oh, sure.
And it's called Spem in Alium, and it's written for 40 voices.
Ah.
40 voices. So it's, I remember doing this at college, and it's an extraordinary piece. The biggest challenge is holding the sheet music, because it's the size of the New York Times, and so it's very hard to see the conductor. But you've got 40 individual choral parts, and it's our hope that one day we'll be able to do that.
Yes. To date, what's the most? What would you say is the most difficult piece you've done, in terms of just the logistics of getting everyone?
The piece this coming Christmas.
The Mozart Requiem, I imagine.
No, that goes pretty well. I think the more modern pieces, for example, the Hodier by Ralph Vaughan Williams is very challenging because of it's got a semi-chorus representing angels, it's got the main chorus, and it has written for obviously full solos. But on top of that, it's extraordinarily complicated rhythmically. Vaughan Williams often sets three against two, with the orchestra playing at one rhythm and the choir singing a completely different rhythm over the top of it. So that makes it quite challenging.
We're getting close to the end of time here. Let's remind our listeners again of your upcoming concerts. Give them those dates one more time, and then we'll talk a little bit about Christmas, and then and play some of this carols that you have done.
Absolutely. So December the 13th at 8 p.m. Christ the King Church in Old Lyme. And December the 15th at 3 p.m. Christ the King Church in Old Lyme. Tickets call 860 526-5399, or go online to conbrio.org, and all the tickets available online. It'll be a terrific concert, as I mentioned before, the Vaughan Williams Hodier, the Vaughan Williams Fantasia on Christmas Carols, which we will hear in a little bit, and some very well-loved carols, old and new. And there'll be a chance for the audience to join in, and they'll be singing the First Noel, and O Come All Ye Faithful, which will be terrific. We're going to finish up with this very spirited rendering of O Holy Night and Angels We Have Heard on High. So everyone will leave imbued with Christmas spirit.
Yes, it sounds amazing. Well, let's leave imbued with Christmas spirit right now, and we can end with this piece that you've done. I want to thank you for being here, Peter Amos, the Vice President of Conbrio. I hope you've enjoyed, our listeners, I hope you enjoyed this, the music and the conversation, and let's leave with this, with the Christmas music, and I will see you again. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Fred.